Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit redbeardsoutfitter.com for more information. This is The Storied Outdoors, a podcast somewhere between Lewis and Tolkien and Lewis and Clark, finding clarity in the stories we tell and the adventures that shape us. This essay is entitled, Why We Do What We Can't, Flies and Fingerlings, written by Andre Davis. It's 2021 and I find myself on the road for work again. I'm going to be in Baltimore for the better part of a month and I have very recently discovered fly fishing. I've just now improved my casting skills to the point where it's still incredibly unpleasant to look at, perhaps even still dangerous, but it's functional. So naturally, I decided it's time to move on to a new skill. Why do we do this to ourselves? I've chosen a hotel that is literally in the parking lot of Bass Pro Shops and right next to the Medieval Times in Arundel Mills. Not an accident. As you may have guessed, I spent an inordinate amount of time in Bass Pro Shop, getting to know the fishing manager and wandering around looking at all the fly fishing gear they had. I was persistently perplexed at the diversity of gear and the different rods and reels, weights, lines, and measurements by X, streamers, and dry flies. Evaluating dry flies with the tweezers around the fly stand, I'd often think to myself, how are those wispy little things supposed to float in the river's current? As I wondered and wondered, the manager gave me space to explore without pursuing me. I believe his name was Steve. If it wasn't, I'm sorry for my poor recollection, but you reside in my memory as Steve now. One day, Steve asked me what bugs I liked to tie. I laughed and informed him that nobody would like to have me tying any flies. I said, I'm more of a break things kind of guy. It's my sort of speciality. Steve laughed and encouraged me by saying that I just might be surprised. At that point, I couldn't even imagine what would happen if I tried tying a teeny tiny little bug. One thing I was confident of is that it would be disastrous and that it would likely somehow end up with something being on fire. For a little more clarity, my fly fishing career as a whole had really just begun. I was still learning how to read rivers. Wading through fast-moving water was a consistent threat to my physical well-being. My casting stroke was a general menace to society, and I had yet to sort out what in the world a trout set was. Yet, here I stood on the precipice of taking on a new challenge. That said, I knew intrinsically that the idea of having to admit that I couldn't learn a new skill would remove all choice that I had in the matter. I could feel the stubborn resolve bubbling up in my spirit. I have to learn this. I have to learn to tie flies, even if I burst into flames trying. So, as one does, I sat in the truck and searched for beginner fly patterns on YouTube. I came across a video series by Matt O'Neill called Fly Tying Simple Flies, in which he tied a Frenchie. On screen, the bug looked big enough and the pattern simple enough that I decided that a Frenchie is where my journey would begin. I mustered up the necessary fortitude and marched back into Bass Pro. Steve showed me the supreme vice, sketched down a short list of things needed to tie a few easy flies, including the Frenchie, from my hotel room. I was overconfident, underprepared, slightly poorer, and majorly stoked about this new journey. He really talked up the Griffith's Gnat for the Patapsco, so I wound up tying that instead of the Frenchie. In fact, I tied 6 of them. Believe it or not, I still have all 6 of them and use them for bluegill when teaching kids. By the way, I don't think I've ever tied a Frenchie to this day. I couldn't get on the water for the next several days as we settled into our work schedule at this new location, and we work 7 days a week when on the road, so no reprieve on the weekends either. But as we got some traction with our work, I found myself wandering around places like the Patapsco, Gunpowder, Herring Run, Potomac, and the Savage Rivers. The Patapsco was only a couple of miles from the hotel, and I really fell in love with it. It was an easy wade, and I found it motivating to have people stand on the footbridge and watch me fish. I also owe the first time I ever taught someone about fly fishing to those storied waters. A young man hiking the Creekside Trail with his father watched me bow and arrow cast Griffith's Gnats into the pools at Cascade Falls. He thought it was the coolest thing ever, his words, and I asked if I could show him. A head nod of approval was issued by his father, and I invited him to join me below the next pool. Wouldn't you know it, he caught a bluegill on his second cast. I truly hope that memory serves him well, as it does for me. I now run a nonprofit called Skills and Gills, teaching kids to fly fish. My main fly, you ask? You guessed it, a Griffith's Gnat. I've gone on to tie several hundred, maybe even 1,000 flies at this point, and amazingly enough, I haven't lit anything on fire yet. Well, except for choosing to burn the glue off of my bodkin from time to time. But nothing more than that. I also went on to try out lots of cool spots on the Gunpowder and the Savage Rivers for trout. Up north, the Gunpowder can be deceptively swift and cold, truly testing a fisherman's skill and resolve. I had little to no skill, but an abundance of resolve, and I learned to really love catching browns in the northern reaches of that river on elk hair caddis and zebra midge flies that I had tied. The boulder fields in the swift southern stretches were so different that the same dry dropper arrangements I used up north, they didn't work as well for me down there. With great determination, I scrambled over rocks, stepped into holes deeper than they appeared, and bushwhacked mercilessly to get away from the access points. I certainly added more injuries to my tally down there than I did fish to my count. But I really wanted to figure out this new style of water. After all, it looked easy in the YouTube videos. One day, I found myself shuffling past some older fishermen at the state park as they were donning their waders. "Where are you fishing today?" they asked. "I suppose I'm just wondering. Didn't have enough time to make a real plan, just making the best of the time I've got after working last night." "Yeah, well, what you throwing?" the other gentleman asked. I opened my fly box of mismatched flies and gestured as though to hand it to him. "Anything you'd recommend?" He looked them over very kindly and said, "You tie these fine-looking flies, young man?" Knowing what he was doing, I grinned and said, yes, sir, I did. Despite knowingly playing along, I was admittedly blushing a bit to have someone looking at my abominable flies. All at once, it occurred to me that it was the first time anyone other than myself had been allowed to judge my work. He evaluated each one at a time. "Good job, but I may make a suggestion aside from which one of these to use." "Yes, sir. I'm going to pick 3 for you to use. Whichever one catches the most fish today, tie 10 of those exactly the same size and colors. Deal?" "Yes, sir." "Copper John, Hare's Ear Nymph, and a zebra midge. That's what he chose for me that day. The hare's ear won the day and would go on to become a go-to fly for me all across the country. I kept my word, and I tied at least 10 of them that night, back to back. It changed the way I tied flies and the way I approached the water. For that matter, it changed the stuff I chose to learn about as a beginner fly fisherman. He taught me that it doesn't have to be complicated. And stubborn resolve isn't always the best way forward. For me, it's more of a game of rhythm and reading, practice and patience, skill and serenity. I cannot honestly say that I've calmed down as much as I probably should have at this age. My wife will certainly attest to that. However, the kindness of strangers, myself included at one point, has started to become an amazing positive force in my life. Fly fishing continues to provide that blessing to this day. Whether it's flies and fingerlings, skills and gills, or just simple kindness to our natural resources and each other, fly fishing has been an incredible source of peace in my life. I hope that as much as I did, you'll take the time to explore the waters nearest you, and perhaps a little bit of yourself as well. We can't thank you enough for listening to The Storied Outdoors. All of your messages and your listenership is so incredible, and we're so grateful for it. If you want to help out the podcast, take some time to leave a review, leave a written review on your preferred podcasting platform. If it's iTunes, leave us a written review or a rating. That would be a huge blessing to help more people find out about these stories and these conversations. We really, really appreciate it. We hope Andre's story has encouraged you to write your own story, to share your own adventure in the place that we love to call the Storied Outdoors.